Welcome to the SMA News Today podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Schaefer. I have SMA Type 2, and I am a columnist and forums director for SMANewsToday.com. Welcome to the SMA News Today podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Schaefer. And joining me today, we have two special guests with us. We're today doing an episode about motherhood in SMA. So we have two mothers from the SMA community. First, we have Trudy Chidovich from Oregon, and she is a businesswoman and a mom to a daughter with SMA. She also does a lot of advocacy. So Trudy, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks.
And then, absolutely. And then we also have Carly Hamilton. She is a blogger and social media influencer with SMA, and she is also a mom as well. So we are going to be, Carly, thanks so much for joining us.
Happy to be here.
Absolutely. So I'm really excited to talk with you both. And before we get started, if everyone could please listen to a brief word from our sponsor.
This podcast was brought to you by Genentech, the makers of an FDA-approved treatment for SMA. To learn about our study results across different types of people with SMA, visit approvedforsma.com. That's approvedforsma.com.
Okay. Well, Trudy, why don't you start off? Tell us a little bit about your story and your family life with SMA, how all that comes into play.
Well, I consider myself so fortunate as far as my journey with SMA goes. I was fortunate enough to have no idea what SMA was until 2018. And as many people know, that was after the advent of treatments for SMA. My daughter was diagnosed with SMA at 5 years old after a several year journey to figure out the cause of her weakness. And it was almost a happy accident that we figured it out at all. Her neurologist was actually involved in trials for some of the treatments for SMA and was convinced that Alina did not have it because she was not exhibiting the symptoms severely enough. She was still able to walk and hadn't lost any skills. But the genetic testing for SMA had been made free literally a week before we went back in to see her. And she said, well, let's just go ahead and do this because it's free. We'll check that box and move on to these other tests because I'm pretty sure that's not what it is. She even told me, don't look it up. It's really scary. So we just went ahead and did the test. I followed her advice and did not look it up. And then I got a call from her saying that's what it was. And I was probably one of the first people to get a call saying your child has SMA and good news, there's treatment. So we were able to get my daughter into treatment within a month. She did have a very bad outcome with her first treatment. But over the course of time, we have seen really good results. She's on Evrysdi now, hasn't had to be in the hospital, visit the hospital at all since she switched to Evrysdi, which is over a year. So we are in an extremely fortunate situation. She doesn't need assistance to walk. You know, she's never going to be the fastest kid in her class, but I mean, if that's our biggest issue that we're dealing with, we consider ourselves completely blessed.
That's great. And Trudy, do you have any other kids or is just your daughter?
I do. I have a son named Dominic and he is 5 and a half. He has been tested. He is a carrier for SMA, but he doesn't have SMA himself. So he will want to keep that in mind, of course, down the road. But for now, we are happy with our little family.
Kevin, that's awesome. Can I ask a couple questions?
Absolutely.
Trudy, was the treatment, was it that she first started on, was it Spinraza that she didn't have a great experience with? Because she was diagnosed at 5, so she probably didn't get Zolgensma, right?
Correct. So she had Spinraza injections, and the first of the loading doses caused a massive spinal fluid leak. But because it was the first dose, we didn't know what we were supposed to expect in terms of the recovery. She was in extreme pain right away. And she was still released from the hospital. She couldn't sleep. Basically the spinal fluid went out through the hole that the needle had made out of the dura, and it collapsed on her nerves and created crazy headaches and pain, but we didn't know what was going on. And we ended up spending a whole day in the emergency room. The doctors didn't know anything about it. It happened to be the 4th of July. Our neurologist was on vacation. No one called her. It was terrible. And then we finally got it figured out. It took about a week. And then they still said there was nothing they could do because there's no way to fix that. She just had to lay flat until it hopefully healed, but it could have caused seizures and brain damage and all kinds of terrible side effects. But thankfully it did heal, but it did leave her with medical trauma. She had to go through a lot of therapy for that. And then of course, continue the loading doses. Just 2 weeks later, had to go right back in again and again and again, and developed a major fear of needles. We couldn't get a blood draw from her. We couldn't get an IV in. We would have to sedate her.
How old was she at that time?
She was 5. Mm-hmm. She turned 6 like later that summer. Jeez. But it was just, I mean, I've had to go through a lot of therapy for it. It was just terrible. And so it got worse and worse over time, actually. And so then it was August of 2020 when the FDA approved Evrysdi, and I just went crazy. I was like, my daughter, I'm not doing another dose of Spinraza. I will not do it. I will not put her through it. And we ended up having to go all the way. We are in a union insurance program, and we had to go all the way to the board of trustees for the union, because I was like, someone is going to listen to me, because this is like one third the cost and it doesn't cause my daughter this crazy trauma, and she doesn't have to go into the hospital and expose herself to COVID. Someone somewhere is going to listen to me. And finally they did. They granted her an exemption, and she was able to get onto Evrysdi right away. I think it was approved on like August, say, 10th, and she had her Evrysdi by August 28th.
Oh, wow.
So it's really amazing. And she has, I would say, from our anecdotal evidence, she has progressed much more with the Evrysdi than she did even with the Spinraza. We saw dips after, you know, the 4 month period between doses. We would see her start falling. She would have less energy toward the end of that period. Not to mention her anxiety would start to increase because she knew she had to go in and get sedated and get the blood draws and all these things, where we call it like topping off her gas tank. She's topping off that tank every single day, and hasn't had, like I said, to go in and expose herself to anything. She has gotten over her needle phobia to the point where she went in and got vaccinated once 5 to 11-year-olds were allowed to get vaccinated, and she went back for her second round. I never thought I could get her to do that, and she did. So I am so grateful for where we are right now.
That's great. That's great. And Carly, what, just in terms of your story, can you talk a little bit about growing up with SMA, and, you know, and we'll get eventually into family life and where you are now?
Yeah. So I was diagnosed when I was 2 years old, about 2 years old. My mom tells the story all the time, and she, obviously that was back, I was born in 92. So that was in the 90s. And back then, SMA was not very well known, right? So my mom took me to multiple doctors. I was going to ask you, Trudy, kind of what some of your daughter's symptoms were, but my mom just noticed that I didn't crawl. I just went straight to walking. When I walked, I had a little bit of a sway, you know, for those SMAers that have had the ability to walk, you have kind of that typical SMA walk. So I kind of had that little bit of a sway to my walking. Whenever I would try to step down off of a curb, I would fall. And I was the youngest of my mom's kids, which she, well, blended family. There, I was the youngest of five, essentially. And so she just knew, like, okay, this isn't normal. This isn't, you know, what I've dealt with my other children. And so she kept taking me to doctors and they would just say, oh, you carried her breech. It's a problem with her hips. She'll grow out of it. And she just kept getting this feeling, mother's intuition, Trudy, I'm sure you get it. There's just something that you know is wrong. And so she kept taking me to doctors and they just kept saying, there's nothing wrong. Don't worry about it. And I can only imagine, I have a daughter now. I would be so, so frustrated if I knew something was wrong and I was taking my daughter to doctors and they were just saying there's nothing wrong. So I can only imagine, Trudy, what you've probably been through and what my mother's been through. They finally took me to Primary Children's here in Salt Lake. We walked through the door and the doctor, the neurologist there took one look at me and said, I'm pretty sure I know what she has. Her name is Dr. Lynn Kerr, and she was up at Primary Children's. I think she's retired at this point now, but we did a muscle biopsy because back then they didn't do genetic testing. Oddly enough, I didn't actually get genetically tested until about 2 years ago when me and my husband got married. I feel like it was 2 years, probably 3 years ago, 3 or 4 years ago. But we did a muscle biopsy, came back that I had SMA. And again, they didn't really know a whole lot. So my mom they obviously give you that scary news because yes, Trudy, like you said, you probably were one of the first to say, hey, your daughter has SMA, but there's treatment. Obviously, that wasn't the case. They told my parents I wouldn't live to see my fifth birthday. If I did, I wouldn't be walking. I wouldn't have that type of quality of life to just soak up the time and enjoy the time they had with me. My mom essentially was a single mom, and she is, part of my language, such a badass. She took that diagnosis and said, no, that's not going to be her story. So I never once got treated like I was special in any way. I never got any special treatment. If anything, my mom probably pushed me a little bit harder than most because she wanted to see me, you know, outlive those expectations. Obviously, I'm much older than 5 years old, so I definitely outlived those doctors. I had a spinal fusion when I was 14, as most of us SMAers have. I've actually been very mobile for most of my life. I have three copies of SMN2, obviously no SMN1. So I've been mobile for most of my life. I got my first wheelchair when I was 8, just a little a manual chair. And then once I went to junior high, it was too hard to push myself from class to class. That's when I got my first electric wheelchair and went to college, lived on my own. Joined a sorority, graduated with my Bachelor of Arts in Communication, kind of started back in college with my social media advocacy because most people, you know, we all hear this like, oh, you're too pretty to be in a wheelchair or you're too funny to have a disability. You know, we hear those really, really stupid comments that you're just like, do you hear yourself when you're saying these things? Like those don't make sense. Like being in a wheelchair doesn't affect anything other than the fact that we maybe not be able to walk with our legs. So that's kind of when I was like, you know what, there needs to be some sort of advocacy, not necessarily when I started for SMA, but mostly for just disabilities and people who are a little bit different. So I graduated from college, kind of started my social media platform then, and then met my husband, and I can have honestly say that probably my social media presence has definitely gone up since marrying him. He's the absolute sweetest with his cute little man bun. He is a huge, huge advocate. Honestly, I could probably say, you know, with SMA, you kind of learn to deal with it. And I think only recently have people with SMA started taking a stand and being an advocate for themselves. Because 5 years ago, like social media disability advocacy, like you didn't see people like Alex, you know, and you didn't see people like myself on social media. And now you do. You see it all the time, and it's awesome. But my husband, he's a huge, huge advocate. And I think it helps people see like, oh, yeah, people with disabilities, people with SMA, they can live a normal life, which obviously, if you haven't read the book, there's no such thing as normal. Yes, Megan, that's a great book if you haven't. So, you know, it just takes a moment for you to recognize that we really are, we're normal, but no one's normal, you know? So that's kind of been a little bit of my story. I now have a little girl. She is 2. If you follow me on social media, she is literally the sweetest thing. It's really kind of been a huge blessing, but I'm sure we'll get into motherhood side of things here shortly.
Absolutely. Carly, thanks so much for sharing. And well, and now you bring out, you both brought up the concept of advocacy. So Trudy, I want to ask you, like, before SMA entered the picture, was advocacy something that was all, was that all like on your mind, or was that something you kind of learned along the way once your daughter was diagnosed?
You know, it's interesting. I grew up in a very politically active family. I'm from a small town in Oregon, and my family came here as pioneers. There were only 2 frame houses here, and they were friends with the local Native American chiefs at the time. I mean, literally way back, 1848. And since then, my family has been very active in the community. My dad was mayor here for 24 years. It's a little 10,000 person town. So I grew up going with him to all different kinds of events and hearing him talk about issues in the community and, you know, watching him, you know, see something come up and working with people in the community to fix it, whether that was a matter of, we need a new aquatic center, how are we going to go about doing that? Or we want to bring a cancer center to town. Just all different types of things. And so then when this came into my life, it wasn't like a conscious decision. It was just like, oh, I know what to do. I'm going to call my state senator and I'm going to talk to her and I'm going to make something happen, because this is not okay that they're not testing for SMA when there is treatments available. This is just kind of like common sense. We need to fix this. And any person on any end of the political spectrum can see that. It's not a question. So that's kind of how I kind of fell into it. But also I really took it as my personal charge, because there's almost this survivor's guilt for me, because my daughter is so capable, and meeting so many other SMA families who are dealing with feeding tubes and, you know, constant infections and, you know, not able to be mobile or travel or work, or, you know, if they wanted to be advocates, the amount of time it would take, and, you know, they're already dealing with such a sick family member. I decided that my way of giving back and showing my appreciation for how, you know, well my daughter is doing would be to make sure that no other families end up in that situation if I can help it. And so that's sort of been my guiding principle with, like, no, this is my responsibility because I have the time to do it.
That's great. That's great. And Carly, going back to you. So by the way, you're 1 year older than me. So 90s kids right here, but, right. But it, so you mentioned earlier, I think your mom was a big factor in kind of helping shape your identity and view toward disability. But in terms of advocacy, like, when did you start considering that as an avenue, or do you feel like you've always been an advocate? What's kind of your angle there?
Yeah, I mean, Trudy, I think that's really awesome that you kind of grew up with that, because most people don't know to go to their senators. People don't know to go to their governors, you know, and it can be kind of a process, and it can be time consuming, because sometimes you send an email and it's just going to go to a general email and they probably won't see it. I think my advocacy started not from the beginning. I think it's definitely started more recently. But definitely I was really involved with the MDA growing up. I was MDA state ambassador. And so when I was the state ambassador, obviously that's a huge opportunity to be an advocate. So I did meet with our governors, you know, I did get to meet and be on the Jerry Lewis Labor Day telethon and kind of start speaking out to that back when that was like a bigger thing. I think it's kind of slowed down a little bit. But I think that's kind of what started my advocacy. And then, like I said, really when my husband, when I met my husband, because I don't know if this is unique to my situation, but I kind of got to a point because growing up, we didn't have treatments, right? It was kind of like we had our diagnosis and that's what it was. Yeah, they were doing research and like you would hear, oh yeah, they found a cure in mice, or, you know, they're working to find a cure with mice. And, but that's, you know, that's kind of as far as it got. And so I think kind of growing up and in my early 20s, it kind of just took a backseat because you stopped going to MDA camp at 18. So you don't really have that opportunity. And so I kind of like maybe fell by the wayside and kind of just sat back and kind of just lived my life because there wasn't really much I feel like I could do. And then I met my husband, I graduated college and I moved to San Diego with one of my girlfriends. And that's where I met my husband at, or actually at our church in San Diego. And my whole life has been SMA, right? We say it's not our identity, but it is part of our identity. That's just the fact of the matter. For him, it was a new thing. He had never heard of SMA. And so, you know, he started asking questions and he would ask me questions that I couldn't even answer myself, and I had it. But it, like I said, like you kind of get that diagnosis. There's not a whole lot you could do. So you kind of just like, I have SMA. That's what it is. You guys are going to die. I did not know. My mom always told me, I don't know if this was maybe mom guilt trying to, you know, come through, or if she genuinely thought this, but she always told me that I got SMA from my dad. Mom guilt, I know. As a mom, you're like, oh, okay. I genuinely did not know that both parents had to be carriers until after me and my husband got married. And we started family, you know, family planning. And we met with a family counselor, genetic counselor, and we met with a neurologist. I did not know that it had to be both carriers. And that kind of just proves like how much I kind of took a step back, because I was like, I have SMA. I don't really need to know the specifics. I know how it affects me. And that's what matters, right? And then once I started, you know, dating my husband and getting married, he again started asking these questions. And I was like, I can't even answer these questions. How embarrassing is that? When we got married, like I said, we started meeting with a genetic counselor and kind of family planning, because it was kind of one of those things where we, and I talked to him about this before we even actually got married, but I told him the reality, like, hey, there is a big possibility that we will not have children. As much as, you know, I want to have kids and you want to have kids, I don't know what that means for me and my health and my body. And I don't know if that's a sacrifice that I'm willing to make. So we kind of had that tough conversation before we got married. And he took it like a champ. And, you know, he just said, you know, I'd love to be a father. It's definitely one of my goals. If that means we have to adopt, that's that. And if it means it's just you and I for our lives, that's also fine. So we started meeting with a genetic counselor. He wasn't able to get genetically tested until I actually got genetically tested. So I had to go through genetic testing to confirm I had SMA. And that was kind of a weird moment too, because I was like, what if it comes back and like I don't have SMA? You know what I mean? Like, I was diagnosed when I was 2. That was a long time ago, and that was through a muscle biopsy. So it was kind of one of those things. I was like, what if it comes back and says like, I don't have SMA. It obviously came back, I have SMA. And then, so we were able to get him tested, and he luckily was not a carrier, which was a huge relief. And so it kind of changed our conversation. Like, okay, we still aren't planning on having children, but if we end up do having kids, we can live in comfort knowing, okay, well, you're not a carrier. So yes, our children will most likely be carriers, but they most likely won't be affected. So it kind of changed a little bit of our conversation, like instead of living in fear, like, are you a carrier? But then also, and this was back in 2017. So this was still prior to any, you know, treatments being in approved. And so once treatments started getting approved, it kind of came to the point where like, okay, well, even if we have kids and they were to be a carrier, it's the best time to have children in with SMA, because there are 3 treatments. There's other treatments that are in the process, that are in the works. So I think right now, for parents who are either newly diagnosed, or, you know, maybe they've lost a child already to SMA and they want to have more, now is probably the best time to be living in the SMA community, because there is so much hope. There's so much like future in our lives because of what is happening. I fully, fully believe that they will have, I know I don't want to say cure because there's not really a cure, but more or less a cure for SMA in my lifetime. And I never thought that we'd be able to say that, but I really do believe with the things that are happening right now, that that is a very realistic opportunity in our future.
Definitely. It's, I was just talking this morning on another podcast work about kind of how the face of SMA is changing. And yeah, it's quite the progression from where Carly, when you and I were kids too.
Yes, so much.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, we will resume in just a minute, but if everyone could please listen to one more word from our sponsor.
This podcast is made possible by a sponsorship from Genentech. Are you living with SMA or are you a caregiver for someone who is? A treatment has been FDA approved based on studies of different types of people living with SMA. Genentech extends a special thanks to all the individuals, families, and healthcare providers who participated in the studies that led to making this treatment option a reality. To learn more about this treatment, visit approvedforsma.com.
Okay, so yeah, so first of all, this has been great so far. And now just getting more into kind of topics on motherhood. So Trudy, can you tell a little bit more about kind of like your daily life and talk about you and your daughter? And also, so how old is your daughter now?
So my daughter Alina is 9 now. She turned 9 this past August. And on a daily basis, I mean, we're just so fortunate. There are little things that bother her. You know, she'll get tired more quickly. She's in a little pod school right now because of coronavirus, where there's just 11 kids that are like pre-K to third grade, and she's the third grader. And so they play tag. And so she will, you know, sometimes come home feeling sad, because, you know, tag is difficult for her. But she, you know, it's been really interesting watching her deal with it. She plans now, like, I'm going to wear pants that I can fall down in, because I fall down a lot when I play tag. And she says, you know, I've realized that it's more about strategy than it is about speed. And, you know, all these little
That's
things.
So cute.
Yeah. And she's really, I am just so amazed to see her, speaking of advocacy, see her advocate for herself. It has been just the most amazing journey. When she ended up doing kindergarten twice. The first time we put her into kindergarten, she hadn't yet been diagnosed with SMA, and we had to pull her out. We didn't know what was going on. We knew she had this weakness. She just couldn't handle it. And that was fine. And then we got the diagnosis and we did the loading doses and she was feeling better. So then we put her back into kindergarten the following year. She had just turned 6. She was very young for her class the first time we tried it. So anyway, she's in kindergarten, and I had read this awesome book, How to Talk So Little Kids Will Listen. And they have a chapter on, it's like, neuro differences or something like that. And they had this great example in there of a kid who had sensory issues and didn't want to wear shorts, needed to wear pants to soccer. And so the mom said, tell them you have, like, and she gave him the medical term for what it was. So he went to soccer and he said that to the coach. And once he said that, the coach said, oh, okay, you don't have to wear shorts. So I took that, and my daughter came to me and said, she's the tallest in her class. In the music recital, they wanted her to stand on the back of the risers, and she didn't feel comfortable because if she gets off balance, she doesn't have the strength to catch herself like other kids do, you know, that just her legs, you know, once her knee is bent, she goes down. So she said, you know, I feel scared that I'm going to fall, but they put me in the back because I'm the tallest. And I said, I want you to say this to me, spinal muscular atrophy. And she says back, spinal muscular atrophy. I said, you go to your teacher and you say, I have spinal muscular atrophy and I don't feel comfortable standing in the back of the risers. I need to stand in front. And so then comes around the day where we go to the, you know, the assembly, and they're up there singing. There's Alina, the tallest one, standing right on the floor in the front of the risers. And she had gone and done that with her music teacher. And I was just so proud for her that she was able to do that. And she has taken that and really run with it. It's been amazing to see her advocate for herself. And now in this new pod school, you know, she was having trouble with the kids. They were giving her a hard time a little bit. And so I said, you know, why don't you talk to your teacher, ask her if you can do a little presentation on what SMA is and explain how it affects you so the other kids will understand. So that way, when something comes up, you can say, well, that's because I have SMA. And that's exactly what she did. She explained it to everyone. And now all the kids know all about SMA, how it affects her. And it's just been really neat to see. So that's how SMA kind of affects our daily life.
That's great. That's great. And then Carly, so you mentioned about kind of the conversations you and your husband were having when you were considering starting a family. So can you talk about kind of the journey from that point to becoming a mother and just how you adapt to all of that?
Yeah, awesome. I would love to touch on that. Really quick though, before we do that, Kevin.
Yeah.
Trudy, I think that's the true form of advocacy is spreading awareness to other people. It doesn't necessarily have to be contacting your governor, you know, contacting the center, working for treatment. A lot of advocacy is letting people know that SMA exists. So I love that your daughter is teaching that. And I think that's amazing as a mom that you said, go do a presentation. I would not have even thought that. So that is seriously that you said, go tell your class, you know? And I think for me, I think that it's really great, Kevin, that you had both perspectives, because I think being someone with SMA and being a mother to someone with SMA, we are in totally different realms, right? We have totally different experiences. And so I really think that that's great that you kind of encourage her to do that, because sometimes when people ask me questions about SMA, I might get a little awkward, right? Because some people, most of the time people come to you and be like, Kevin, why can't you walk? You know, they like are so aggressive with it that it's like, okay, now I'm uncomfortable. Like, how do you send like, hey, Carly, like, I see that you have a little bit of a different story. Tell me about that. Then it'd be a little bit more of an easier conversation. But a lot of times people come to you so aggressively that it's like, shoot, now I'm awkward. Now I'm uncomfortable. I don't know how to handle this. So I think that you created a great space for her to go in there and share her story. So I just kind of wanted to give you some kudos there, because I think that's awesome.
Thank you.
You're so welcome. Okay. So yes, once we got genetically tested, we found out again that my husband wasn't a carrier. That was a huge relief, but it kind of came to a point where I was still not quite sure, you know, what that meant for me. I wasn't on treatment yet. So this was back in, let's see, I had B, my daughter's name is B. I had her in 2019. So I got pregnant at the beginning of 2019. So I was not on any treatments at the time. It's actually quite a crazy story. So my best friend had just had her first baby. And we have been best friends since we were in elementary school. She's the girlfriend that I moved to California with. She was the one that would carry me on her back up the stairs to go see a movie, or carry me on her back to the beach. And she was that friend that I hope all of us have that really is just, you know, by your side no matter what. And she had just had her first baby. And I went over there. It was a week after she had her little girl. I went over there to meet the little girl and my best friend. Now this is going to sound harsh, so I give her some grace. She straight up told me that this was the hardest thing that she had ever done and that there was no way that I was going to be able to do it. And so, yeah, Trudy, you should, I mean, all this is a podcast, so you can't see faces, but that's a pretty bold statement. And when I tell people that story, people are like, damn, that your friend said that? But, and she might not have even said that. When you have a baby, you have freaking all sorts of emotions going on. She might not have even realized what that meant. I think it was just hard for her, right? Having a baby is freaking hard. And so I think she just knew me. She knew me since we were in elementary schools, and she knew what I was capable of, and she knew what she was capable of. And she just genuinely thought, I think in her mindset, like, this was so, so hard. I don't know if my best friend can go through this. And so that night, so that was like a Friday, I believe. That night I went home to my husband and I said, Jared, like, this is what Michelle said. I think I've come to the conclusion that we're just not going to have kids. So I need you to be supportive of that and be comfortable with that. And he said, of course, babe. Like, I told you before, and I'll tell you again, if it's just you and I, that is all I need. You're all I need. But if we have kids, you know, if we want to go through adoption, like we can have that conversation too. So that was Friday. I found out I was pregnant that Tuesday. That is such a crazy story. Yes. That's how I know, like, I don't know if anybody believes in a higher power, but that's how I know God had a different plan for me. We went to Disneyland that weekend. The whole time we were in Disneyland, TMI, but I kept thinking I was going to start my cycle and I kept going to the bathroom. I'm pretty sure I started my period. I got to go to the bathroom. And then I obviously had it. And then I'm pretty sure I started. I got to go to the bathroom. And we got home that Tuesday and I had told my friend that I don't even know why, like in my thought process, because we weren't trying to plan on having kids. And I had been on birth control up until about October right before, but for the ladies out there, birth control is tough. Like it freaking made me crazy. So I had gotten off of it to kind of like regulate my emotions and my hormones. So I had been only off of birth control for a couple months, but we in no way were planning on like having children, exactly like I said earlier. And so I don't know, my friend, the same friend that told me, you know, you couldn't do this. She's like, maybe you should go take a pregnancy test. And I was like, no, I'm not pregnant. Like there's no way that I'm pregnant. Obviously when you're an adult and you're doing certain things, there is a way that you can be pregnant. And so she's like, no, you need to go take a pregnancy test. I was working as a spa manager at the time. And so I had to go do some deposits and the bank was in a grocery store and it was right there in the pharmacy. So I was like, well, I'm over here. Might as well grab some pregnancy tests. So I grabbed some pregnancy tests, took it back to work. Took the pregnancy test at work, didn't tell my husband I was taking it. Cause like I said, I was like, there's no way. And it freaking came back positive. And the first thing in my head was like, holy shit. Like, and I don't swear very often, sorry, I was swearing quite a bit, but that just kind of conveys my emotion. I literally was like, oh my gosh, like what the heck? And, you know, it was kind of one of those moments where I was like, so terrified. Most people take a pregnancy test and usually it's an exciting time because it's a planned thing or, you know, they're really excited to have children. And I was like, oh my gosh, like, I don't freaking know what to do. And I was at work and I didn't want to stay at work because I was like, how do I freaking keep this secret in with all my employees? And I was like shaking uncontrollably and we're already shaky as is with SMA, but I was like shaking so bad. But I didn't want to go home yet because I didn't want to be home alone. And I knew like, okay, well now I'm pregnant. I want to tell my husband in a cute way. So I hadn't told my husband yet. So I just stayed at work and kind of tried to like make it through the day, ended up getting home. I had made a cute little sign out of this like letter board that said welcome home daddy and had a little stuffed animal and the pregnancy test. I actually have the video recorded. If you follow me on social media, you can go back quite a few years, find this video. And I have a video. And at first my husband thought I was just being like sexual, like welcome home daddy, you know. And then I was like, and so you can see his reaction, he just like sees it and like laughs. And then I'm like, babe, like look, like there's pregnancy tests. And so he was obviously just as shocked as I was. And he told me, and like, obviously we're both like scared. And he asked me, he straight up said like, are you scared? I'm like, I am terrified. I don't know what this means. This is, you know, kind of been thrown at us when in my head, I'm thinking we're not gonna have children. And he said to me, you have been through so much crap in your life. This is going to be probably one of the easiest things that you can do. And I came into my pregnancy with that mentality, right? I had one friend telling me, there's no way you can do this. It's the hardest thing. And then I have my husband saying, you've been through so much already. This is going to be a piece of cake. And I freaking loved my pregnancy. I loved being pregnant. It was the best thing ever. It was a little bit harder because I was high risk. And a lot of, Trudy, you probably get this. And Kevin, you too, and everybody who's listening, I would say probably 95% of doctors don't know what SMA is. They're like, oh yeah, like I've heard of it. You know, they read it in medical school like 15 years ago briefly, but they don't know really what SMA is. And so it was kind of hard to find an OBGYN that knew about my disability, that kind of would advocate for me. I had an OBGYN that I actually didn't love. I didn't really realize that you could switch OBs like mid-pregnancy, so I just stuck with her. But a lot of the things, speaking again on advocacy, is I started finding, and in my head, like I didn't know any moms that had children with SMA. And then I went to my social media. I had quite a few people reach out to me and say, oh my gosh, are you going to the Cure SMA conference this year? And I'm like, what the freaking heck is that? I've never even heard of Cure SMA. And what is this Cure SMA conference? And I had multiple people be like, girl, you need to go to this conference. And so we went to our first Cure SMA conference in 2019. I was probably about like 20 weeks and I met multiple people out there that have that are moms that have one or two kids. And my mom also came out to the Cure SMA conference, and I think that was a huge relief for her to see, oh, there are moms out there with SMA that have children and living life to the fullest. And so I think that was a great piece of peace and comfort to me, but also to my mom. And so anyway, I don't even know where I was going with that train of thought. I had somewhere I was going with it, but now I don't even remember. But it was just nice to know, you know.
Well, it's funny you say it. Like, I know a lot of people in the SMA community who only started really getting involved in the full-on community in the past few years. Like, I'm kind of a rarity in that, I mean, my parents and I were involved in Cure SMA before it was Cure SMA. It was Families of SMA in the 90s.
Oh, wow.
Because, like, that was one of the first things I said. So this is something, Trudy, I wanted to praise to you, because that was one of the first things my mom did when I was diagnosed, because I'm the youngest of three. Neither of my siblings have SMA. And so it was very new to us. And so one of the first things, you know, she was doing was trying to look for some kind of resources out there. And this was still a little bit pre-Google social media age. And so her colleagues at the newspaper she worked for at the time found out about Families of SMA. But I was going to ask that, Trudy, was like, in those early days, did you search out the SMA community immediately, or what was kind of your process there?
So we were fortunate. We were diagnosed through the Shriners Children's Hospital in Portland, Oregon, and they have some great communities for not only SMA, but, you know, kids with disabilities, but they do treat several children with SMA there. So they invited us to join their community meetups, but we were so deep in just having learned what this was and going through the loading doses and then having that terrible outcome. And then just the stress on our family and everything was just so crazy. And we didn't end up joining any of those right away. And then we ended up meeting a 12-year-old girl with SMA. Her name's Ren, and she is lovely. And she was really kind to reach out to Alina. So we ended up kind of introducing them. By that point, COVID had hit. So we introduced them through FaceTime. And that has been a really wonderful resource for Alina to be able to appreciate how good she has it. And it's also been really eye-opening for my husband and myself, because we've been together for 18, 19 years. And my mother-in-law had been pushing us to have kids from like day one. And, you know, had we done that, Ren could easily have been our daughter. And seeing that, you know, she, you know, has had to have the rods in her spine and, you know, will be in the power wheelchair for her life. And that's where the survivor's guilt comes in for me, because it's like, because we ended up waiting to have children, and because at the time, my philosophy on motherhood has completely changed since the SMA diagnosis, by the way. Mm-hmm. I was very all natural when I found out that I was pregnant. I didn't want to do anything that wasn't natural. So I refused genetic testing. I refused any ultrasounds, because I said to myself, I have a friend who has a sister with Down syndrome. I was like, if there's anything wrong with my beautiful child, I will find out when they're born and we will deal with it then. I'm not going to find out. And thank goodness, because honestly, had they done genetic testing at that time in 2012 and found out that she had SMA, they may have suggested that I not continue with the pregnancy, because there's no cure at that time. There's no treatment at that time. There's no treatment even on the horizon at that time. And so I am so thankful that we didn't know then. And we went through this journey from when she was 2 to 5, trying to figure out what the heck was going on. And once again, I'm so thankful we didn't figure out in the meantime, because I would have been another one of these people who gets the diagnosis and they say, yeah, sorry, she probably is going to end up in a wheelchair and there's not going to be anything you can do. And we hope she's going to live past 20 and all that stuff. And I never had to go through that. And I'm so thankful. And it's like the higher power for sure. It's like all these weird delays and things of this like really aggro thing that I had about being all natural saved me so much stress in the long run, because we didn't find out until there was already this magical potion that could fix it, you know? So it's been interesting from that perspective.
That's really interesting. And yeah, I think too, every story is different. And but I like what you said about how your philosophy of motherhood has evolved. And Carly, I imagine, going back to, it was a surprise, and then you're on this journey, and then go back to meeting others in the community and how that changed your perspective.
Yes, Kevin, that is exactly where I was going with the Curious in May. And I was like, oh, that's where I was going. So yeah, I connected with different moms out there in the community that have children. And they were huge in my pregnancy, because they would message me, hey, how are you feeling? How are you doing? And like I said, I didn't love my OB. She didn't really seem to be fully aware of my situation. And didn't really seem to put in a whole lot of effort to learn about my situation. And so I had moms reach out to me and be like, okay, like, are you having her via C-section? Are you having her vaginally? And for me, I was like, I don't need to have her vaginally to feel like I am a mom. I'm like, I'm going to go with the C-section, because I know that if I try to do it the other way, at some point it's going to probably end up in a C-section, and then it's going to be an emergency C-section, and it's going to be that much more stressful. So I'd rather come into it being fully prepared, knowing fully what we're going into. So I just opted for a C-section from the beginning. And I'd have moms be like, okay, well, are you delivering her early? And I'd be like, oh yeah, I think we are going to deliver her early. Okay, make sure you get the steroid shot so that her lungs develop. And I'm like, why is my doctor not telling me these things, right? But so they were really, really instrumental. And I think in such a great delivery, and then in having B be so strong when she was born. So my doctor wanted to have her at 30, wanted me to deliver at 34 weeks. And that, for people, I guess, maybe who are a little bit naive to pregnancy, and normally you deliver at 40 weeks, and they wanted to deliver at 34. The baby is viable at 28, so you can take a baby as early as 28, but then that has lots of complications. So I was like, you know what, I'm going to try to go as long as possible. My goal was to get to 36 weeks. My doctor was like, let's do a 34. And I was like, no, I think I can last another 2 weeks. I think I should be fine. Like I said, my pregnancy went really, really well. I was mobile at the time. As I got bigger, it started getting harder, because I had to kind of overcorrect. I had this giant belly, so I kind of had to lean back more. And it threw me off balance a little bit more. So I fell quite a few times while being pregnant, which is also kind of scary. But other than that, I just learned to be a little bit more cautious. I started depending on my wheelchair a little bit more. And then when I ended up having her at 36 weeks via C-section. I did have to be completely put under for the C-section. An epidural. They had to put me completely under general anesthesia because I have those rods. That was really, really, really scary, because when you get put under general anesthesia, I think all we all know is like going under general anesthesia is kind of scary as it is. But when you're having a baby, normally when you have a C-section, you're allowed to have your partner in the room. When you go under general anesthesia, you're not. So I got wheeled into the operating room by myself, thinking, okay, what if this is the last time I see my husband? You never know with general anesthesia. There's this part where like, what is wrong with this woman? I was bawling. Like I had tears just streaming down my face, because I was like, I'm so scared. Now I'm alone. And then you're also naked. So you're cold on this bed, like strapped, like fully like across your arms. And luckily my anesthesiologist, he was amazing. And he wasn't super familiar with SMA either, but he did his homework. So he actually Ended up giving me some nerve blocks. It's for pain medication. And so I never once had any pain from my C-section, not once, not even a little bit. And he was super, super great. But I kind of had a meltdown to him, and I was like, my daughter's coming into this world. I'm not going to be coherent. I'm obviously under general anesthesia. I'm not going to be there to welcome her to the world. My husband's not allowed to be in the room. So she's going to be welcomed to the world by doctor she doesn't know. And I literally had this like breakdown because I'm like, this is a miracle. I didn't think I was going to have her, and I don't get to be there. My husband is going to be there. So our anesthesiologist kind of pulled some strings, and my husband was able to stand in the NICU room, which is attached to the OR. They were able to pass the baby through. He wasn't able to have her because she was 4 weeks early. They had to make sure that her like lungs and everything were good. She came out screaming. She was perfect. She didn't have to spend a single day in the NICU. Being 4 weeks early, that's a huge thing. And I totally contribute her health and her strength to those other moms out there with SMA who were my advocate, who came to me and said, Carly, you need to say, hey, we need these steroid shots. Hey, we need this, we need that. And she really came out just perfectly fine. I had a little bit of complications, not anything major after the C-section, because our body is metabolizing differently. The anesthesia took a little bit longer to wear off, so my arms wouldn't work. And they were like, no, like your anesthesia should have already worn off by now. Because again, nobody really knows about SMA. They don't put in that effort. And so it wasn't until my anesthesiologist came up and was like, well, your body probably metabolized a little different. Give it a couple more days, see if that anesthesia wears off. And it, in fact, a couple days later, my arms are working, you know, back to the way they were, and it was a little bit easier. But since having me, like being a mom, you just stress out about all the things like, am I going to be a good enough mom? And then when you add a disability on top of that, like that's an even bigger concern. Am I going to be able to hold her? Am I going to be able to breastfeed if you want to do that? Like there's so many things that you think, am I going to be able to do this? And then you think like, is she going to be, you know, traumatized by having a parent with a disability? Like, and she has adapted so amazing. So amazing. She, and like, obviously she doesn't know any different, but she comes, she sits on my footrest. That's where she goes. Or she hops on the back. She rides on the back of my wheelchair. She's two. She goes and gets my shoes. She helps me put my shoes on because she sees that's what my husband does. So she is learning to be so, so compassionate. And in ways that I thought like, oh, I'm not going to be a good mom because I can't pick her up when she's hurt, or I can't do these things. I think that, you know, we're able to teach her a different kind of emotion and personality that most people don't get to have at such a young age. And so anybody out there who has SMA that wants to have children, but they don't know, I'm here to tell you, you're going to be exactly what your child needs. If you don't believe in a higher being, guess what? I do. And I know Heavenly Father is going to give you what you can handle. And I can attest to that because B is the perfect fit for our family. She has not skipped a beat, and she just has really blown me away with how she's adapted to having a mom with a disability in a wheelchair.
That's great. And now, and well, first I wanted to say that you said a while ago about how there's a lot of doctors who don't know what SMA is and stuff. And like, I know, so Carly, you're partially ambulatory. I am a weaker type two, so I've never been ambulatory, but I remember there have been times where like going in for a scan or an X-ray or whatever, and they'll be like, okay, hop on over to the table here. You know?
Yes.
So, yeah.
It's the worst. It's so annoying. It's like, are you for real?
Yes. Oh yes. You deal with that all the time. Yeah.
Yes. So annoying.
Yeah. And it is what you were saying too about like, how your daughter is kind of, it learns to adapt naturally. Like I have a niece and two nephews. My niece is five now. So like, it's similar thing too, where like she's learned how to help out in little things, and like,
yeah.
And just that exposure too is like, Trudy, like you were saying, I think awareness is one of the greatest forms of advocacy, and yeah, not just in a larger government setting. Obviously that's important, but also just in everyday social settings, like educating her peers and just through living. That's great. But yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and just wrapping up here. So Carly, you kind of already hit on this, but I wanted to ask both of you kind of like what message you would have to other mothers in the community. So like Trudy, for you, you know, moms sons, daughters, kids with SMA, do you have a message or advice you want to share based on your experiences?
The biggest thing I would say, and Carly touched on it earlier, was that mother's intuition, and that you really do know your children and your own self if you have SMA better than anyone else does. And really trusting that, lean into that, because I know in our experience, it was that both for myself and for my husband. He was the one, you know, we did physical therapy for 2 years and he's like, she's not improving. We need to go back. There's something more. And our pediatrician lived across the street and he would see us with our daughter in a stroller at age 4. And he'd be like, you know, it really would be better for her if you made her walk. Like, I don't know why you're putting her in the stroller. And our parents said the same thing. And we were like, no, we're not doing that to her. We're not going to make her walk. She can't. We know her. It's not a matter of making her work harder. So listening to your heart, not, you know, not just taking someone's degree to mean that they know more than you do, not just taking someone's age or seniority or their position, because no one knows their own body better than that person. And no one knows their children better than their parents.
That's great. And Carly, anything you want to add? I know you kind of already touched on it, but any message for especially people with SMA who want to be mothers or parents, any advice you want to share?
Yeah, I think this, you know, goes for even parents who have children with SMA, because I think I've had so many moms reach out to me on social media that say, you know, seeing my story and seeing, you know, me share my life on social media, it gives them hope that their children will be able to have that. Because I think, you know, you get this diagnosis and you think like, is my child going to get married? Are they going to have kids? And this is to, you know, those moms and dads out there that have children with SMA is, yes, they can. You have to raise them knowing that they can, though. If you raise them thinking like, oh, you have this disability and it's going to hold you back, guess what? It's going to hold them back. Words are super, super powerful. But if you raise them thinking, you know what, they're going to be able to do anything that they want to put their minds to, they can. To the moms out there or dads out there with SMA, guess what? Parenthood is going to look super, super different for you. After I had B, I had so many, we had two cribs because one crib I couldn't get B in. So I had to have a different crib that was set up for my needs. And then this crib set up for my husband's needs. And then I had a pack and play that was, we pushed our coffee table over to our couch and we put the pack and play up on the table and couch because I couldn't get B off the ground. Parenthood is going to look super, super, super different for you. But that doesn't mean it's not right. And I think that's something that I kind of had to tell myself, especially in a world of social media. You see so many moms out there and they're definitely, I can't say that I'm like super mom, right? There are definitely nights where I cried myself to sleep because B wanted her dad because daddy could walk around and hold her and comfort her while mommy couldn't, right? So there is definitely moments where it's been hard and it's been really sad. And honestly, with having B, I have lost most of my mobility. And I think that's been the hardest thing about being a mom, but I knew that that was a possibility, right? And that was one of the main reasons why I was like, I don't think I want to have kids because I don't want to give up my ability to walk. At this point in time, I can take maybe one or two steps assisted with my husband, right? I've gained a lot of weight because you can't really work. I mean, we can work out, but we can't really work out enough to really burn those calories. So I've gained quite a bit of weight since having B. So yeah, there's been some hard things about being a mom with SMA, but it all is so relative. When I think about, you know, my life and what my daughter has added to our family, and I know that she is probably one day going to be the president or a CEO of a company, because we always say she's not bossy, she's the boss. She knows exactly what she wants. And we are trying to raise her to be inclusive, whether that is of your sexuality, of your gender, of your disability, of your race, whatever it may be. We want her to know that that's okay, because guess what? Your mom's in a wheelchair. And guess what? That's totally fine, right? So we really are trying to raise her the best way possible. But for those parents out there, you can do it. I follow, if you don't follow her, Tanya, I think that's how I say it. I think she's in Europe. She just had a baby and she wanted to have, she would message me all the time. Like, she wanted a child so bad. She got pregnant. They unfortunately lost their first baby. They just had their little girl, and she is loving being a mom. And yeah, most people, like you said, Trudy, most people would look at her and say, like, you can't carry a child. Like, this is going to be too hard on your body. Like, this is not going to be feasible. Do not listen to them. If you think you can do it, do it. Be realistic with yourself and be honest with yourself, because let's be honest, there are some limitations we have, but don't let what other people say to you hold you back. If you want to be a mom, you be a mom. If you want to be a dad, you be a dad. You go out there and you make your life what you are. Again, just realize it's going to look a little messy at first, a little different. There's probably going to be toys on the floor, because at some point, I can't pick up 15 toys with my grabbers. I get over it, right? But motherhood is really one of the greatest things. And I almost let, you know, my disability stop me from having that blessing. And luckily, like I said, Heavenly Father had a different plan. And so we have her. But I really, really encourage people who want that to go out there and obtain it in any way that they can.
That's great. Well, Trudy, Carly, this has been fantastic. I know that this hopefully be encouraging for a lot of potential parents out there, and current ones, so, and just everyone in the community. So want to thank you both. Carly, I know you're all over social media. Trudy, is there anywhere you want to be found, or want? I always let guests do a plug at the end if they choose.
Oh, sure. Well, my husband and I have a yoga studio. So Fire Station Yoga is us on Instagram. So you can follow us there and reach out to me if anyone has any questions.
Okay. Awesome. Awesome. And Carly, is it just, I know I just followed you. Is it Carly Hamilton or?
Yeah. What's yep. Yours? So yeah. It's at Carly Hamilton with three N's at the end. So you can find me there. I have a blog, but I haven't posted it in a while, but I still have people be like, oh yeah, I came across your blog and read it. And I'm like, that was like 5 years ago. So don't be, it's a little embarrassing, but it's okay.
Well, I would say you've been a little busy since then, so understandable.
A little bit.
But
yeah. A little bit. I love it.
Awesome. Well, for our listeners out there, you can hear more stories like this by subscribing to the SMA News Today podcast. You can also connect with us directly on our forums and follow our main website at smanewstoday.com for the latest SMA news and perspectives. I'm your host, Kevin Schaefer. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time. Take care.
The information in our flash briefings and podcasts are provided for informational and educational purposes only. Be sure to tune in daily to SMA News Today for the latest news and perspectives regarding the disease. Discover more content that might be of interest to you at www.smanewstoday.com, and be sure to follow us on social media and join our SMA News Today forums, a trusted SMA community ready to welcome you anytime.